Well, this little exercise may be helpful for graduates now and in the days ahead. It's probably helpful for all of us sometimes in trying to decide what it is we want to do next. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to pretend like you have a magic wand, and I want you to think of a situation in your life right now that is really pressing on you. And if you could take that magic wand and wave it around that situation and make it whatever you wanted it to be, what would it be? How would things change? Think of a specific situation. Something's pressing on you. There's a conflict that needs to be resolved. There's a relationship issue that needs to be dealt with. Something needs to change. If you had that wand and could wave it around that situation, how would things change? What would happen? What would happen next? Now, none of us has one of those things. None of us has a magic wand, but there is an experience that we can think through that relates to what we do have. It's a similar exercise, and it can help us in similar ways if we're willing to face it, and that is fear. Most of us are afraid of something. Most of us are afraid of many somethings, some things we can name and some things that we can't quite name, some things we can articulate, we can put into words, and some things that are just feelings and we're not quite sure how to communicate them. Is there anything that you are afraid of right now? Think of that situation you were thinking about earlier. What would you do in that situation or another situation if you weren't afraid? Who would you be? What would you choose? Why am I leading you in an exercise about fear in a sermon that's supposed to be about love? What in the world does love have to do with fear? The author of 1 John has something to say about that. You may have heard it a moment ago. If you want to look again in verse 16, here's what he says. God is love. Whoever lives in love lives in God and God in them. And this is how love is made complete among us, so that we will have confidence on the day of judgment. In this world, we are like Jesus. There is no fear in love. But perfect love drives out fear because fear has to do with punishment. The one who fears is not made perfect in love. Now, this passage is at the center of John's letter and the center of John's message, and the message is clearly about love. The word love, or some form of it, appears no fewer than 27 times in these 15 verses. Love is clearly what is on John's mind. And in a passage that is clearly about love, God's love, our love, God being love, John also chooses to address fear. Specifically in a moment when he's reflecting on how we treat our neighbors. This passage, in this place, John does what Jesus does as well by connecting the love of neighbor to the love of God and connects our lack of love and sometimes our hate to fear. Fear of God and fear of others. So what would you do if you weren't afraid? What would we do if we were not afraid? What would we do in our lives and in our relationships, in each circumstance, the things you thought of earlier, the things that are coming flooding in right now, if God's perfect love, as John says, were to drive out all of our fear? What would that look like? What would you do if fear never kept you from fully living in love? I was wondering this myself earlier in the week, and I was sitting on the couch with my computer and Bible and thinking about this sermon and trying to imagine different illustrations or scenarios or stories that might bring this to light as you do. And so as I do, I was sitting there and there were people around, my three children, and I thought out loud to them, "Hey kids, when I talk about love, when I say God is love, or when I'm trying to describe what love is there any story or idea that comes to your mind? What comes to your mind when I say love?" To which Nora replied, "Smoochy, smoochy." "Yeah, but," I said, "what do you think about? Is there a story? You know, the Bible says God is love, and I'm having trouble coming up with something to describe that." Now, at that point, things went silent, and I thought the conversation was over. Dad was just thinking out loud, but what I wasn't noticing was Nora got up from her snack at the table, and she walked around to the living room, and she put her hands on my shoulders, and she stood in front of me, and she reached out and looked into my eyes and said, "Dad, think of the last time that you felt really loved." Okay. And she says, now think about the last time that you felt God's presence. Didn't they feel similar? Because God is love, and so if you can think of a time when you felt loved, that might help. Well, my word. It does help. And I've been doing it throughout the week, and I commend it to you, not just as an illustration or as an idea, but as a helpful prayer experience that might help you get in touch with the love of God yourself this week. And in the meantime, I was reminded of this children's book that was written by a friend, Cameron Vickery, and also her friend, Victoria Robb Powers, who is a pastor. And I thought that maybe if I read this to you, it might help you think of a time when you felt God or when you felt loved. The little girl says, "One day I asked my mom, 'Where is God? Is God here or is God there?' And she said, 'My love, God is everywhere. Is God way up high or way down low? My love, God is way up high beyond the tallest trees. God's love is always bigger than the biggest thing you see. And God is way down low in things beneath the dew. God made all creatures just like God made me and you. Is God here in these flowers or there with that dog? My love, God is in the field of flowers that can grow and bring us joy, because God is in all nature connecting with every girl and boy. And God's warmth is in the dog who loves us all day long, always happy to see us, and forgiving every wrong. Is God here when it's loud or there when it's quiet? My love, God is here when it's loud in the music that we sing. God is even present when shouts of chaos ring. And God is there when it's quiet in the stillness that we meet. When we can't hear a thing, God is close like our heartbeat. Is God here when I'm happy or there when I'm sad? My love, God is here when you're happy, in your joy and in celebration. God dances with you because you are God's creation. And God is there when you're sad, holding you when you're blue, hurting alongside you, because God gets sad too. Is God here when I'm scared or there when I'm brave? My love, God is here when you're scared, when you're anxious and afraid. God is here to hold your hand on days you feel betrayed. And God is there when you're brave, when you feel like standing tall, when you're ready to face dragons. God is with you through it all. Is God here when I'm good or there when I'm bad? My love, God is here when you choose goodness and are living from your heart, When you follow the path of love, God is with you from the start. And God is there when you mess up. If you make a choice that isn't best, it doesn't mean you're bad. It just means you're human, like all the rest. Is God here with her or there with him? We might need to pause there and say that one again. Is God here with her or there with him? My love, God is here with her, having formed and called her good. God dwells in her even when she feels misunderstood. And God is there with him, having made him wonderfully too. Because God is in all of us, it doesn't matter who. Is God here when I'm alive, or there when I die? My love, God is here with you now, filling your lungs with every breath. God is always near, and nothing can separate you, not even death. Because even when you die, God's arms are stretched out wide, ready to wipe away your tears and greet you on the other side. So God is here and there? I asked. Yes, she said. God is always here, and God will always be there. Because, my love, God is everywhere. And that is gospel truth, friends. That is gospel truth, and yet why does it often seem like it's not true? If God is love and God is everywhere and perfect love drives out hate and fear, then why is there so much fear and hate in us and in the world? I'm not exactly sure, but it does seem like it has something to do with us and how much of God's love and God's life we're willing to let into our own lives. How much of God's love and God's presence are you willing to open up your heart to? And how do we do that? How do we let God in? How do we let more of God in? How do we open up our hearts to God and God's love? This seems to be exactly what John is addressing here in this letter. Verse 19, he says, "We love because God first loved us. Whoever claims to love God yet hates a brother or sister is a liar. For whoever does not love their brother and sister whom they have seen cannot love God whom they have not seen. And he has given us this command, anyone who loves God must also love their brother and sister." Which reminds me of a story about the Quaker spiritual guide Elton Trueblood. One time there was a pastor who was on retreat, and he invited Elton Trueblood to join him and be a part of the retreat, and Elton Trueblood began their time together with a one-question quiz. And here it was. What do you think is the most important word in the Bible? What do you think is the most important word in the Bible? He asked the pastor this question, and then he told him to go and contemplate that for a while. And he was there for a while thinking about it, but he was kind of stumped because he thought, well, the obvious answer would be God, or the Sunday school answer of Jesus. But then what about neighbor, he thought. After all, the two greatest commandments that Jesus gives are for us to love God and love neighbor. And there were also other words that came into the pastor's mind, and so he couldn't decide. Finally, Elton Trueblood offered him what he believed was the most important word in all of the Bible. And what do you think it was? It was the word "and." God and neighbor. This and that. Us and them. Here and there, like the little girl was talking about with her mother. And John seems to agree here. What we see in 1 John is love of God and love of neighbor are interwoven and interconnected. They are somehow a part of the same thing, like inhaling and exhaling are part of breathing and how one really isn't any good without the other. It's almost as if we close ourselves off to loving our neighbors, we are closing ourselves off to the love of God, and vice versa. And it's almost as if when we open ourselves to loving our neighbors more, or to loving more of our neighbors, we're opening ourselves up to more of God's love that can then begin to flow in and out of us. This three-sermon series has been shaped by the quote, "In essentials, unity; in non-essentials, liberty; in all things, love." And all things can mean so many things, can it? And so we go back to the original question. In so many things in your life, what would you do if you were not afraid? What would you do in your life if there was only love, if that was the all-defining reality? It's a really good question, one we should truly consider in all things. Savannah Guthrie, who is a news anchor for the Today Show, helps us with this in the first chapter of her book titled Mostly What God Does. And Connie lent this book to me and commended it to me. And I'd like to close this sermon by reading a passage or two from its first chapter. The book begins with Savannah Guthrie explaining her title. It's from Ephesians 5, 1 through 2, which in the NIV says this: "Follow God's example, therefore, as dearly loved children, and walk in the way of love, just as Christ loved us and gave himself up for us as a fragrant offering and sacrifice to God." That's how it reads in the NIV. But in Eugene Peterson's translation, The Message, it reads like this: "Watch what God does, and then do it. Like children who learn proper behavior from their parents, because mostly what God does is love you. Mostly what God does is love you." Isn't that beautiful? Mostly what God does is love you. Savannah elaborates on this with a line of questioning reminiscent of the little girl and her mother in the children's book we heard from a moment ago. She writes, "Where is God and what is God up to? Mostly what God does is love you. How does God feel about me? Mostly what God does is love you. What job should I take? Where should I live? Whom should I marry? Do I forgive that person? Do I deserve forgiveness? Am I shallow or selfish? Am I unworthy of love? Have I broken my life? What does God think about the choices that I have made? Mostly what God does is love you." Savannah says these simple words radically reframed my concept of God. They grabbed me and held my heart. Mostly what God does is love you. Imagine it, she says later, God loving you, God seeing you, God appreciating you, God delighting in you, God knowing you, God having compassion on you, healing you and forgiving you. See it, she says. Appreciate it. Grasp it. Hold on to it. Inhale God's goodwill and attune yourself to the evidence of God's love and look for it everywhere. And what you will find when you do is that love like that is not just for you. It's for the world. For love like that cannot be contained. It can only be exuded and exhaled outward. Watch what God does, Ephesians says, and then do it. Like little children who learn proper behavior from their parents, mostly what God does is love you. He goes on, keep company with God and learn a life of love. Observe how Christ loved us. His love was not cautious, but extravagant. He didn't love in order to get something from us, but to give everything of himself to us. Love like that. Love like that. This is our great commission. Choose to believe in God's love. Wrap yourself in it. Let it warm you from the inside, and then go out into the world and you do it too. Go out into the world and you do it too. Perhaps even if and even when you're still feeling a little bit afraid.